This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week we pay a visit to the Olympic Area Agency on Aging and find out whom case aide Heaven Gregg is able to help with what. You might be surprised to find out that you are one of them. So now let's go inside the Compass. Do you have a problem and don't know where to turn? If it has anything to do with aging, Medicare, Medicaid, health insurance, disability, or getting free help taking care of an ailing loved one, the odds are that Heaven Gregg is the person you want to talk to, and that she can provide you with real help and direct you to programs you possibly never even knew existed. Gregg is an information and assistance specialist for the Olympic Area Agency on Aging. I met with her recently at the agency's offices located upstairs in the two-story medical building across Sheridan Street from Jefferson Healthcare Hospital to ask her whom she can help with what, and it turned out to be surprisingly extensive. What is the Olympic Area Agency on Aging, and what does it do?
Olympic Area Agency on Aging is a AAA. Which are all across the United States, put into effect by the Older Americans Act back in the 60s or early 70s. We're funded by state and federal funds, and we're governed by the county commissioners of the four counties we serve. We serve Jefferson, Clallam, Grays Harbor, and Pacific counties.
By governed, do you mean the commissioners instruct you in what areas you should be working on, or is that by sort of federal or state mandate?
That's more by federal and state mandate. The county commissioners are kind of the governing body who our executive director goes to approve budgets or, you know, whatever. They're like the board of directors of a nonprofit. We're considered a quasi-governmental agency. So, but it means we're not really part of any government, but we're not really a nonprofit because we are sort of governmental because of our mandates. Right. So we help on a higher level than what I do, you know, advocate on a state level as far as issues affecting seniors and people who are disabled. What I do mostly is helping people in our community access resources. And we have a variety of programs under our umbrella that do different things.
So what kind of resources are accessible?
We help people. I've helped people apply for Social Security disability. We help people navigate Medicare, help people apply for Medicaid, give out information as far as the low-income housing, what's out there, which mostly is getting on waiting lists at this point. Talk to people about long-term care options, about in-home care, assisted living care, skilled nursing facility care, what's available, what might be appropriate for themselves or for a loved one, and kind of how to navigate that system, because it's sometimes like a different language for people. And it seems like none of us expect to get old, and so we haven't really thought about what's going to happen and what our options might be.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. So what is old? How old do I have to be to come in here and get help? Or do I have to be old at all? Are there services that you could supply to disabled people, for example?
Well, we talk to people of all ages about health insurance issues through our SHEBA program, which is Statewide Health Insurance Benefits Advisors, which a lot of what they do is related to Medicare, but they can also help people kind of sort out medical insurance issues for any age, you know, and help them figure out what the best choice is or is going to be for them. So we help people of all ages and abilities with that. For people with disabilities, again, all the same kind of referrals, you know, helping people access various programs, helping with applications. Just about everything we do, we can help someone who's disabled, or even if they're not officially, like, they're not getting Social Security disability yet, we can help them access that. A lot of what I do is just helping people to understand what is being asked of them or what is required, and then helping them to understand, helping them to ask the right questions and then to understand what the answers are. For people, we do have a couple of programs that are strictly for people that are 60 plus, and that is our Senior Legal Advice Clinic, which is a free half-hour appointment with an attorney to discuss civil legal issues. Nothing like bankruptcy or divorce, you know, family law, but they do wills, powers of attorneys, talk to people about property disputes, can give you advice on if you have a persistent bill collector who won't leave you alone, things like that. But a lot of it is wills and powers of attorney.
So that's a once-in-a-lifetime half-hour free legal advice.
It can be more than once in a lifetime, you know. I mean, we certainly don't want to have it be abused with every little question, but, you know, people have situations change. You know, they have different things they may need to ask questions about. So
I see, but you're not likely to get a full, like, you know, living trust, you know, set up through an attorney this way.
No, trusts are one thing that they don't do because they're complicated. So, again, it's for simple wills, for people who don't have, a ton of resources, don't own property in another state, aren't trying to create a special needs trust. You know, like maybe they have a little bit of money in the bank and they own their home and their vehicle. You know, that kind of situation is something that can easily be addressed through our Simple Wills program. If it becomes, I mean, we've had people come in sometimes who have, you know, $500,000 worth of resources, and those people, they need to be directed to an actual attorney that they, you know, that they have to pay for. But
how about, I mean, helping set up things like durable power of attorney, health power of attorney, those sorts of things?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Healthcare power of attorney, healthcare directives. So the healthcare power of attorney is appointing someone to make medical decisions for you when you're unable to. And a healthcare directive is telling your healthcare team, your doctor, whoever, what kind of end-of-life measures you want, whether or not you want artificial liquid, artificial food, to be hooked up on life support. You know, there's some choices you can make in that document to direct what you would like to have happen. And then there's financial power of attorney, which is to allow someone to be able to, you know, pay bills, deal with your finances. It can be pretty extensive what they can do. And with the healthcare power of attorney and the financial power of attorney, you can either make it effective now or effective when one or two doctors have said you don't have the capacity to make those decisions anymore. It's one way to kind of avoid, you know, when someone gets dementia and can no longer do stuff, if they don't have a power of attorney and they need someone to act for them, you have to go through a whole guardianship proceeding, which is long, complicated, and probably expensive because you definitely need an attorney to kind of help you through that whole process.
I heard of a case of a person who had Alzheimer's who signed a document that basically said that at a certain point at which their wife would decide, they had gone far enough that they wanted to exercise voluntary cessation of eating and drinking, which apparently is a legitimate legal way to end your own life. But without that power of attorney, without having made that decision in advance, at the point that you become too demented to, the wife wouldn't be able to choose for him at that later date, which...
Well, that gets into some complicated issues that I don't feel qualified to talk about necessarily. But with the healthcare power of attorney, it does allow whoever you appoint, whether it's a spouse or a child or a friend, to be able to communicate with your doctors and to make healthcare decisions for you. With a healthcare power of attorney, you can't do the Death with Dignity Act. The person, it specifically doesn't allow for someone with dementia to access that because the person making that decision for the death with dignity has to have, they have to be cognitively intact to know what they're deciding. And dementia kind of rules that out.
I mean, what do you do when the person who is now demented says, give me a drink of water?
You have to honor that. Right. And you also can't make decisions that would be contra what that person would want. And I know that the attorneys often talk to people and say, if you're someone who does kind of want to be let go naturally,
No extreme measures.
No extreme measures, exactly. You probably don't want to appoint your child who wants to save you at all costs, because they would probably be making decisions incompatible with what your wishes are. That's also an area where it's really important to communicate, and I think a lot of people don't. Again, just like we don't want to think about aging, we don't want to contemplate dying or someone we love dying. So people don't often talk about what their wishes are, how they want things to happen or not happen. Nobody just wants to talk about it. So then sometimes you're left guessing.
So is it kind of your role to encourage people to come in here to confront that taboo and to talk about it?
That can be. I mean, it's something certainly because of the arena I work in that, it's something that I have to be willing to talk about, I talk to people about that. You can certainly make a power of attorney and not tell anyone and wait until the kids need it and they can try and figure out what you want them to do. But I think it's good to have conversations and around all parts of aging. I oftentimes have people who say, well, mom needs help in the home, but, she's afraid of losing her independence. And I always try and encourage people to frame it not as losing independence, but as continuing to remain independent. So, if mom breaks her hip and goes into a skilled nursing facility and doesn't ever regain full mobility to return home, that's definitely losing her independence, where having someone come in to do the vacuuming and, shopping or whatever, that's helping to maintain independence and hopefully prevent that loss of independence that can happen.
Let's say, Erin, let's do a hypothetical. So someone comes in here and says, I'm really concerned about mom. She's living alone. Her house is a scandalous mess. It stinks in there. There's rats, there's cockroaches. I think it's unhealthy and dangerous for her there, but yet she refuses to take in any help. But I think she's a danger to herself.
That's a hard situation. And I would tell someone to call Adult Protective Services. They're an agency that has people who investigate adult abuse and neglect, including self-neglect. The problem is, depends on your perspective as far as whether it's a problem or not, but Washington State has really strong civil liberty laws. So we have the right to make poor decisions, and decisions that other people might think are untenable. But if mom is refusing to allow anyone to come in and letting her house fall apart, Adult Protective Services might come in, might help her. They're kind of glorified social workers, try and encourage her to accept some assistance or get into some social service programs. But they cannot, nobody can force her to leave her home. They can't make her do something different. Children have more leverage to kind of force someone to do something. But even when there's a guardian in place, a court-appointed guardian, if this person says, no, I refuse to go to a skilled nursing facility, the guardian can't make them. Oftentimes, people think that there is someone, some big grand someone, who's going to force someone to do something different. And there kind of isn't. And so sometimes what my role is trying to explain to people what the resources are not, you know, what in other states, they have other systems for this. And, you know, state of California is one where it's much, much easier. They have a 72-hour hold, you know, if someone's a danger to themselves or others. Or, you know, the one I commonly think of is Britney Spears. Her father got conservatorship of her, and he could literally make decisions about who she could hang out with and, you know, what she could and could not do. That wouldn't happen in the state of Washington.
This was when she was an adult.
Yes, as an adult. Yeah, when she sort of went off the rails, you know, I don't know what was going on with her, but, you know, shaved her head and was behaving bizarrely. And yeah, her father was able to, you know, they, I'm assuming, did some kind of 72-hour hold, maybe longer, go to court, get the conservatorship, I believe is what it was called. That doesn't happen like that here.
All right. Like, you know, a panel of psychiatrists has decided that this person is mentally incompetent to take care of themselves.
That would have to be a very extreme case. And there are, as far as mental health goes, you know, they have the designated mental health professionals who can decide whether to commit someone for a 72-hour time period. But in Washington, again, the person has to be in imminent danger to self or others. So it can't be that person was feeling suicidal yesterday, but today they're not. That person isn't going to get committed. Has to be like in this moment. So there's kind of no panel of professionals that sit down and say, okay, this person's completely incompetent. At the point where someone
is catatonic,
then, you know, at that point, the family can do whatever they want. You know, someone's going to take them somewhere and they're not going to protest that. But, you know, while they still have the ability to say, no, I don't want to do that, it's pretty limited as far as anything being forced on them.
Okay, well, we've gotten off on a tangent. There's a rather sort of special case here. So I want to back up a little bit and ask you, what might be the most unexpected service that you're able to tell people about? I mean, so there must be something that people come in here and it sets off a light bulb in their brain, or it like opens a door they didn't even know existed.
You know, I think it's different things for different people. I will never forget early on working for this agency, which I've been here almost 12 years. I was talking to a guy who was in his 70s or 80s, who was living alone at home, and he was thinking about whether or not he wanted to move into an assisted living, and he just really wasn't sure. And I said, well, you know, they'd be happy to have you participate in some activities, have a meal. You could check it out, talk to other residents, you know, just see whether that was what you want. He thought that was the best idea he had ever heard. It seemed really basic to me, but for him, it was like an epiphany. Oh, I can go see it and talk to people, you know, and he ultimately decided not to. You know, he sold his house and bought a little condo, and he was perfectly happy. But, so for different people, it's different things. One thing we have that people probably don't know a lot about is through our Family Caregiver Support Program, we have relatives as parents. And that is, could be grandparents raising grandchildren. It could be, you know, aunt or uncle raising someone under 18 who's not their biological child. We have a certain amount of money that can be spent per family to help get necessities, whether that's school clothes. You know, I've helped people pay for like activities for a grandson that they couldn't afford on their fixed income. We've bought beds for people when suddenly they have a small child and they don't actually have a bed for them and can't afford to buy one. School supplies, gone back to school shopping, you know, a whole variety of things. And so that's something I don't think people always know about. And of course, it is.
I didn't know about it.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that I often comment is nobody knows about our services until they need them. And then they go, I didn't even know you existed. That's really common for people to say. So.
Well, that's one of the reasons that KPTZ is here today, is to, you know, like say that the Olympic Area Agency on Aging exists and that it's Look, what is the address here?
915 Sheridan Street, Suite 202. So we're in the big green building there, medical offices downstairs. DSHS has most of the upstairs, and we have one little corner.
Right, and you actually enter from the back of the building off of the parking lot here, and I see that you have a website, which is www.03a.org. And what's your phone number?
360-385-2552. And can I just tell you briefly some of the many things we do?
Yes.
So I mentioned our senior legal advice clinic. We also have minor home repair and senior emergency funds. Those are also things that are strictly for people 60 plus. We can usually, you know, it depends on the budget, but we've helped like repair wall heaters or, you know, when someone's plumbing had something happen that wasn't too extensive, we could help with that. We can also partner with some other agencies if a larger sum is needed that we can't meet.
Is there some need to prove financial need in these cases?
It is. Yeah, those two are definitely based on finances. But it's pretty generous before you have to pay a percentage. So, you know, you tell us what your income is. And so far, we haven't had to have like absolute proof. So please don't lie to us. But so I mentioned our family caregiver support program. Besides the relatives as parents, we have respite care that can be available in a couple of new programs called Medicaid Alternative Care and Tailored Supports for Older Adults that do certain things. Those two are through Medicaid, but they're kind of alternative or through DSHS, but alternative to Medicaid. But there is a screening that happens with our family caregiver support specialist, kind of assessing where the family caregiver is at mentally and emotionally. And that helps the specialist come up with things that will help support that family caregiver continuing in that role. That's really an important program because most of the caregiving that happens in the United States is done by family members. And when they burn out, it can become a major cost to Medicaid primarily. So the state is trying to kind of help stave off the need for Medicaid by providing some other supports earlier in the caregiving process.
Tell me a little bit more about the respite care. You mentioned respite care.
The respite program is where we, our agency pays for up to 30 hours a month of respite through one of the home care agencies that we contract with.
So this is actually sending people into the home so that the caregiver can get out and...
Yes, because that's really an important thing. Oftentimes as caregivers, particularly women, but it can be men too, we sort of slowly fall into the caregiving role. I mean, sometimes it's something major that event that happens, but oftentimes it's something small, especially with a lot of chronic diseases, Parkinson's, dementia, you know, there's all kinds of those where, well, we're just doing this little thing, just doing that little thing until one day we're doing all the care and haven't got a life of our own and our own health is suffering, mental health, emotional health, physical health, and we're at a breaking point. So respite can help provide, you know, some support for people to get out of the house, to go do tasks that they enjoy, you know, to hang out with friends, to go to support groups, to go to their own doctor's appointments.
People don't have to be at the breaking point.
No, we would prefer that it's not the breaking point because that's the point where people are usually like, this person's going to have to go into a facility because I can't do that anymore. But often it's at the point where it's like, I'm tired, I'm cranky, I'm so often I think, you know, we've promised mom we would never put her in a facility or we've promised our husband we would always take care of him or whatever it is. But I always tell people you have to take care of yourself first because if you don't take care of yourself and something happens to you, then who's taking care of that person? So self-care is very, very important. I think, you know, it's like on the airplanes when they give you the directions about the oxygen mask, first put yours on and then help your child or help the people around you because you can't do anything if you're broken. So we want to get people in here sooner rather than later. to try and either get some respite or start going to support groups or take Powerful Tools for Caregivers, which is a 6-week course that kind of helps teaches people how to deal with difficult situations, how to deal with difficult emotions, because as caregivers, there are a lot of emotions around that, and not all of them are positive. And so sometimes we feel guilt because we're angry at our demented spouse, you know, or we feel like we shouldn't feel angry, or we shouldn't feel guilt, or we, you know, a lot of those are really reasonable things to feel. And it's just, how do you deal with them? And that class can help people like learn all those things. It also gives caregivers an opportunity to come together and to understand that, that they're not alone. And that even though this person's taking care of someone with Parkinson's, and that person has dementia, and that person has, you know, whatever other thing, a lot of the feelings and emotions are similar. And so it's not a support group, but people do feel supported in that. Because you can have someone who is very well educated, counsels other people, but when they end up in that role themselves, they, you know, all the book knowledge in the world doesn't help that kind of heart knowledge. You still need the support and interaction with other people.
So did you have other programs you wanted to talk to me about?
Yes. We have volunteers through the SHIBA program, Statewide Health Insurance Benefit Advisors, who help people with health insurance issues, primarily Medicare issues, but all sorts of them. And they are at the Tri-Area Community Center. I think it's the second and fourth Tuesday of every month. The Port Townsend Community Center, the first and third Tuesday of every month. And you can call our office to get those dates and times. So, and then we also have the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program. I think that's one that not a lot of people know about and is very valuable. Jane Meyer runs the program for Jefferson and Clallam County out of our SQIM office, but she has volunteers in every skilled nursing facility, assisted living, and adult family home in Jefferson and Clallam County. And those volunteers are there to advocate for residents' rights and to help, you know, if there are issues or for residents having an issue with the facility and they want help, that long-term care ombudsman can assist them, you know, in whatever they way they want, whether it's a specific issue regarding billing or, you know, needing someone to sit down when the care plan is being done, or, you know, discharge issues or problems with specific staff, whatever it is, if the resident or their family member requests it, that ombudsman can be there to kind of help negotiate those things. And because people in facilities have a lot of the same rights that you or I have in our own homes, just because they're in a facility doesn't mean that the facility can say you can't have visitors or you can never leave or various things like that. So that's kind of a broad-ish overview. You can always call and we can let you know if what's available or what's not.
Right. What's that phone number again?
360-385-2552.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Steve.
With Olympic Area Agency on Aging Case Aide Heaven Gregg, this is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. and repeats the following Saturday at noon. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.